نشان تو بھائی ویرس نشان تھا سامنے
Hare Krishna, those devotees who have come to Krishna consciousness below 1 year.
So today we were planning to discuss on the topic of conflict resolution. As given in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a lot of lessons learned from Srimad Bhagavatam. How I felt this topic is relevant to us. Even as devotees, we have differences in opinion sometimes, isn't it, between devotees. So that leads to the conflicts between two people, and sometimes the conflict becomes never-ending. So it would be nice to learn and the nature of the conflicts and how such conflicts could be resolved by having a Krishna conscious perspective. Conflicts arise because there is something that is of common interest to two people, isn't it? If two people are interested in the same thing, then there will be conflicts, naturally. Just like you all know the story of the two cats who wanted the same bread. You know that? Isn't it? So they wanted the same bread. So they were fighting for it. What happened as a result? They went to a monkey. So the monkey had a balance. So he said, don't worry, I will cut it equally and give both of you. Don't fight. And you know what happened by then? So the monkey cut it into half, not exact half. So one was bigger, one was small. And then the excess portion was taken away by the monkey and monkey ate it. Then again it became too small than the other one. And this way, finally what did the monkey do? He ate it all. Yeah, he ate everything. So this foolish cats, they both lost the bread. Similarly, sometimes in the course of a conflict between two devotees or two people, the purpose of the mission may be defeated. You know the story Prabhupada said about two disciples who were massaging the leg of a guru, isn't it? So one disciple said, I do better than you. The other disciple said, no, I can do massaging better than you. I have undergone a course on massaging. What do you know? You are a spontaneous massager. I have undergone a course. So that fellow said, what is the use of your course? You have only theoretical bookish knowledge. Our Guru Maharaj always appreciates me more because I always massage better. So in the course of fighting, what did they do? So that fellow said, my leg is better, he said. This leg is more comfortable than that leg. So saying like this is sort of pinching the legs. Each of us, the other leg of the Guru, which the other disciple was massaging. Isn't it? And the Guru jumped up from his bed and said, what is this? Are you massaging or are you pinching me? Isn't it? So the conflict between two disciples led to what? Dissatisfaction of the Guru. Isn't it? So the purpose of the mission can be defeated if two people have conflicts like that. So it is really worthy to know about how these conflicts arise, why these conflicts arise, and how can conflicts be resolved. When there is a common interest and two people have interest, should we give way or should we take the upper hand and, you know, take it on our hands and say that I am right? Many times this question comes into devotees' minds, because sometimes when you have an opinion which you are convinced that it's a 100% right opinion, correct opinion, isn't it? And you know that the other person's opinion is foolish, it's not right. So you are trying to explain to that person. Many times you will see between two people and this kind of tussle, tug of war going on. Prabhu, I am telling you, Prabhu, you see, you understand? And then the other person saying, I know all this, Prabhuji. This, what you are saying now, I heard 5 years ago. What I am having is the latest opinion. So sometimes both of them are trying to, you know, emotionally subdue one another. And in the course of endeavoring to push the other person down, both of them are going up and up. You will see that sometimes there is no end to such emotional tussles. So it only increases the bitterness of heart. So that is why it's a very important topic in that respect, even for devotees. Actually, shastras are full of examples of conflicts and how different conflicts were resolved in different ways. There are many examples. But sometimes the conflicts are unresolvable. Sometimes you see, Lord Krishna himself became a peace messenger to resolve the conflict between Pandavas and Kauravas. Actually, Lord Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a Trikala Jnani. He is all-knowing. So he knows Kurukshetra war is inevitable. And there is going to be war because the Kauravas are unreasonable. The Kauravas headed by Duryodhana, they are unreasonable. So naturally there is going to be a war. But then why did Krishna go as a peace messenger to Kauravas? Only to please Yudhishthir Maharaj. That's all. No other reason. Because Yudhishthir and the other Pandavas, they were very much begging Krishna that we are all brothers, we don't want to wage a war against Kauravas. And also many Kuru elders are all worshipable and respectable. So please kindly go as a peace messenger and you settle the matter. So many people ask, why not Krishna? After all, he is God. God means he has complete control over everything. If he wants, he could have avoided the war. It wouldn't be difficult for Krishna to subdue Duryodhana. And he could have stopped the war. Why didn't he do that? Actually, when Duryodhana was trying to capture Krishna and make him a captive, when Krishna came to know, Krishna just laughed. And he said, all the kings of the world together, put together, they cannot catch me. What can this fellow do? So Krishna showed a great Vishwarupa Darshan in the palace. So Krishna is certainly powerful. He could have subdued Duryodhana if he wanted. But Krishna did not do that because he comes to this world to teach valuable lessons for all of us. He wants to show the world that somebody on the level of Duryodhana, who is so greedy, that he is not even ready to give 5 villages to Pandavas. He is so greedy, and that he considers Pandavas failure to be his success or point of success to be his failure. So Krishna wants to teach that such unreasonable people deserve an end. So that is why yada yada hi dharmasya lanir bhavati bharata abhyuttana dharmasya tadatmana srijamyaham. So paritranaya sadhuna vinashachi dushkutam. So Lord comes for that. So he will fulfill his mission. He will fulfill his purpose. But what interesting thing we understand from that is, the living entity's desire is so strong that even if Lord interferes, he will not pay attention to the Lord. Vinashakale Vipraita Buddhi. When the time of destruction came for Duryodhana, even when Lord Krishna interfered to give him good advice, he could not hear. In fact, he blasphemed the great devotee Vidura and he drove him off. So Vidura went on a pilgrimage after that. So he didn't hear any good advice. If you read Mahabharata, you'll be amazed. Good advice is not only given by Vidura. Markandeya Rishi is giving good advice. You'll see Bharadwaj is giving good advice. You see Narada is giving good advice. Many other sages coming to the assembly are giving good advice to Dhritarashtra and in turn to Duryodhana also. But he didn't pay any heed to good advice. You will see that. So, the free will of the living entity is very strong. And the Lord doesn't interfere with it. So we all have the free will. And our opinions and our desire to do things, they all come from the free will. So because our free will is very strong, naturally the opinions and ideas and the conceptions and the notions that arise from the free will, we are very strongly attached to it. It's very difficult for us to give up. In fact, the living being has come to this world only because of misusing that free will. We wanted to do something, so we are here. We were recently in KGP base. Janana Vaspu was speaking. He said, all our troubles begin from saying, I like this, I don't like that. He said, here is where the troubles begin, he said. The whole thing begins from here. He said, I like this, I don't like that. So we all have our opinions formed based on our conceptions. So we hold on to those opinions. So, because of such opinion forming, we come in conflict with others. And many times we wonder, what should I do? Should I give way or should I take lead? The material world is so created, there are conflicts in this world because the material world is created in that way. You see, a small worm is eaten by a fly, and that fly is eaten by, say, a spider. You've seen a spider eating a fly. Spider is eaten by a cat. The cat is eaten by a dog. Dog is eaten by a tiger. And the tiger is shot by man. Isn't it? So there is an ecological cycle. In this world, there is always, as we say, jivo, jivasya, jivanam. This is at the physical level. We are talking about conflicts in the mental level. This is at the physical level. Every living being wants to survive. And every living being wants to enjoy. But you find that they are not allowed to survive or enjoy for all time. The world is so created that jivo jivasa jivanam. One living being becomes a food for another. Yeah. So one who is fitter than the other one, the loyal one becomes a food for that. Not only that, there is also ati bhaudika klesh in this world. Ati bhaudika klesh means misery arising from the other living beings upon us. You will see that. Just like a mosquito is so tiny, but the mosquito can very silently come and sit on your thighs and take his needle and inject it into your body and suck your blood. That's the time you come to realize, it's painful. By the time you beat his fly, already he is gone. He has done his business. And then he gives you some disease, isn't it? Malaria, something like that. Smaller than mosquito or the virus and bacteria, isn't it? They can cause trouble. We can see that. Against our interest. That's not our interest. Against our interest. But that is the way the world is created. That your interest may be one thing, But other living beings' interest is different than yours. Yeah. And everyone in this world fights to serve his own interest. Yeah. You can see that. For mosquito, the body consisting of 33 trillion cells with lot of blood is whose property? His property, not your property. For him it is his property. He thinks, oh, this body is kept for me to enjoy. And you may say, who are you to come and sit on my body? But you escape because you want to serve your purpose and he wants to serve his purpose. So in this way the atibhautika klesha is created in this world. So the material world itself is created like that. That there will be inevitable conflicts in the material world. Conflict of interest. Your interest is to preserve the body. His interest is to drink the blood. Isn't it? Like if you take a tiger and a deer, the deer's interest is to run away. Somewhere there, if the deer saves his life and goes home, he will tell his wife and children, today, my lord, a tiger was chasing me. You know, I was saved. Now I am safe at home. Yeah? Isn't it? And the tiger will go and tell his wife and children, today we couldn't get anything to eat. That fellow ran away. So one person loses, another person wins. Isn't it? And that is the way this world is. Yeah? And this world, because of the nature of this material world, somebody loses, somebody wins. But there is a competition always. So there one loses, another wins is not the point. But the point is that there is a cutthroat competition at every level. Now I am talking of mosquitoes and tigers and deers. The same analogy can be extended to the human circle. You can see that in Annamaya Kosh, Pranamaya Kosh, Jnanamaya Kosh, Vijnanamaya Kosh, Anandamaya Kosh. There are five types of koshas. In this, if you see, Annamaya Kosh is a stage where a human being thinks that, you know, everything that is around me is meant for my eating. That's all he thinks. He thinks, I am the only organism existing and everything else is meant for my eating. Anything that flies, anything that moves, you catch and eat. So it's Annamaya stage. Annamaya means tongue is having a high prominence. Eating. And go on eating more and more and more and more. That is Annamaya stage. Whereas when one comes to Pranamaya stage, one understands, I want to eat everything around me, but they are also opposing me. Like imagine you catch a goat or a chicken and try to eat. And they will oppose, isn't it? Don't kill me. They will try to fight against you. When a person understands that Pranamaya means, we have to compete with others around us for our survival. For my survival and my interest, to serve my interest, I have to fight with others. That is actually Pranamaya Kosh. If you see the modern corporate scenario in companies, it is Pranamaya Kosh stage. Because you will see there is a cutthroat competition for corporate survival. You can easily see that. Every company, in order to save itself, it has to talk ill of other companies. Like you join some company, like one mobile company. The first thing they will teach you, you know what will they teach you? If you want to market a product, anybody has done marketing of any product? Yeah, what do they teach you first thing? Yeah, flaws of the competitor. How to dehumanize the other companies. How to talk ill of them. Don't buy this because of this problems. That is the first thing. Even before you tell about your product. Isn't it? Isn't that amazing? Pranamaya means competition. How to catch the market, how to compete in the market, how to defeat the competitor, how to vanquish. So these are all coming in Pranamaya. Survival. When survival is more important. And then comes Manomaya. And then comes Vijnanamaya, the platform of the soul. One exists in the platform of mind and platform of the soul. And Anandamaya is a platform of understanding soul and super soul relationship. It's a much higher stage. But although we are devotees, we are trying to practice at the Anandamaya stage. Of course, our ambition is to achieve the Anandamaya stage. But we are not in Anandamaya stage at the moment. Now, Anandamaya stage is our ambition, aspiration. But we are likely to be in Pranamaya stage. Or Manomaya stage. In a stage of competition. Because of bodily identification. The source of all conflicts is bodily identification. Like for example, one man and another man, they fight. Why they fight? because of caste difference, or because of the difference in state or difference in country. I am a black, you are white, or I am an Indian, you are a Pakistani, isn't it? Or I belong to this caste, you belong to that caste. I am higher caste, you are lower, you are untouchable. So these are all bodily identification. So when we identify with the body, this is called as false ego. False ego is actually the cause of conflict. The beginning of conflict, it begins from false ego. And when such conflicts arise, how should one behave? How should one respond whenever one is placed in a situation of conflict? Because we are human beings, we are in a society which is cohesive, all people living together. We are mutually dependent on one another when you live in society. It's not that you can live alone, you can live independently. We all depend on one another. Like even in a devotee society, community like ours, we all are dependent on one another. We all are helping one another, depending on one another. And such conflicts arise due to various things. For example, say there is money. So money doesn't lead you to conflict as long as it is somewhere else, somebody else's property. But now the money has come here. So money has come to temple or money has come to a project. Then everyone thinks, oh, now my temple has got a big money. Now I would like to get it for my project. Isn't it? It's likely. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was telling about that Bagh Bazar Mandir, isn't it? When they got the Bagh Bazar Mandir, what did the devotees do? They all went and occupied different rooms and they locked the rooms. One brahmachari wanted, he wanted Ganga facing room, you know. From the window you can see Ganga flowing. So I would like to have this room. The sea face, you have Ganga face. So somebody wanted this room, that room, and Bhaktisiddhanta came to know. He said, come on, you people are all renunciates. And they are occupying the room and locking, saying this is my room, that's your room. So what did he say? Let us just take all these marble pieces and sell it off in the market. And with that print the books. And distribute the books instead of quarreling for the resources he was selling. Similarly, when there are resources, there can be quarrel with respect to allotment of resources. Which resource should be utilized for which project or which person. So there can be conflict when there is resource. So we can talk so much about, even in a community like ours. Ours is a big community. ISKCON is a very big society. And there can be conflicts. When there is a conflict, naturally there are two people involved in a conflict. And coming to the point of how one should resolve the conflict when it happens between two devotees. Sometimes the power of a person or position of an authority takes lead, isn't it? Because you know that I am small, that person is big, so naturally you may, you know, give up the conflict. Like that, it's likely. But otherwise, the worst conflicts come between two equals. Because if somebody is superior, you may be a little upright. And somebody is inferior, you may try to dominate. But if there are two or equals, what happens? Then there is a problem. Then there is a problem. So there are many different situations. I mean, the same problem could be solved in different ways. In our ISKCON, in Mayapur, there is one Anuttam Prabhu, who is appointed by ISKCON to teach all our gurus and sannyasis and presidents and all the leading devotees of ISKCON society several topics like communication, topics like leadership and management. And one of the topics is also conflict resolution. So you may wonder what do sannyasis and gurus have got to do with conflict resolution, you may wonder. But actually, ours is a big society which has got a lot of resources, a lot of manpower, and a lot of varieties of activities. And naturally, there are conflicts. For example, there is a conflict going on about a topic, how much woman should be given position and power in ISKCON, or how much should they be treated equal with men in our society. So there is a big group debate going on like that. So ISKCON, as a society, faces such situations. And in our level, we are quite small, a smaller section of our society, ISKCON society. Although we are ISKCON Pune, our small temple, we have many bases, and in all these bases, many, many students live. And when students live together, come together, there are conflicting situations, undoubtedly. There is a question of what decision should be made. One devotee has one opinion, another devotee has another opinion. And both of them are very strongly convinced that my opinion is the best opinion. So, it happens. In temple also, between two brahmacharis it happens. Congregation can happen between two devotees. So, in such a situation, conflicting situation, how should we act? So, I was planning to take a very important example from Srimad Bhagavatam. But you will be able to appreciate it better after we discuss the different type of solutions. They can be sent to see video. Somebody can. So there are different type of solution which I would like to listen and explain with some examples. The most short solution is called as win-win, we call it. Win-win means I win and you win. Both are happy. This is called Sarve Janaha Sukhina Bhavanti. Let everyone be happy. See, there are different types of people. One category of person is called a Sajjan or a gentleman. He desires welfare for everyone. He doesn't harbor any malice for anybody. Just like Yudhishthir Maharaj. So, Vinyan means he desires success for everyone. So, I would like to read the definition of Vinyan. He says, the heart that constantly seeks mutual benefit in all human interactions. Sees life as a cooperative place, not a competitive arena. The underlying assumption is that there is plenty for everybody. So these are the natures of win-win. How do they see life? A win-win person, how does he see life? He doesn't see life as a competitive arena, but a cooperative arena. And also he sees that there is plenty for everybody. Not my way, or not your way, but a better way. So this is a very deep sentence. What is the meaning of not my way, your way, or better way? For example, say I come with opinion to you, and you come with opinion. And then I hear you attentively, and you hear me attentively. Now I agree with you that your opinion is best. Then I say that out of the two, now we have discussed it, we have understood. So it seems that your opinion is more beneficial from the point of view of the mission of Srila Prabhupada. So let us go that way. Let us take that way. Say, for example, sometimes you want to fix a house. So some of the bases, Mathura base, now they are searching a house, isn't it? Mathura base devotees, they have? Yeah, they have. So they are searching now, say they have seen four houses. So two devotees want one house and the other two want other house. Isn't it? Here is a conflict now. Isn't it? So there has to be mutual talk. And the mutual talk should be honest, without prejudices. Why can we have prejudice, can somebody say? What kind of prejudice can we have when you people are talking? Like one person says this house is best, that person says this house is best. When you talk, what kind of prejudices can come?
He assumes something, like distance from the temple.
No, those are all factors. Those are different factors that count, you know. Those can be discussed out. Like distance from the temple, distance from the college, preaching, and all those considerations can be taken. And we put it all on the table and we discuss. There is one strong prejudice that may come, that because I liked this house is best. See, Prabhu, you know, I liked the house first, you know. Whatever you say, I agree with all the reasons you gave, and for the mission of Srila Prabhupada, that house is the best. But because I chose this, you know, you should give up that and you should come, everyone should come here. Like that. So that is a very strong prejudice. Sometimes somebody may have. So this is a very difficult thing to solve. For example, You know, when all the people decide something, sometimes you have to cooperate with everyone, isn't it? Sometimes somebody may have one independent opinion. I was telling one recent example I can tell you, like the new temple land which was coming. So all the congregation, everyone was happy for one particular land. And there were one or two people who were like very minority, like one out of 30 or one out of 25. And all 28 people are wanting one land. So one or two people wanted in some other place. So I was telling them it's better for us to, you know, cooperate with others, especially cooperate in their spirit. Especially everyone is enthusiastic about this. And we compared the losses. It's not that we didn't compare. If 28 people say a utterly absurd thing, you know, then it is something of worth for discussion. But when we made a comparison, everyone understood that, say, what 28 people are saying is, say, 80 or 90% perfect. And what the one or two people say is 120% perfect or 110% perfect, you know. It's better to flow with the 80% perfect people or 90% perfect people. Why? Because by cooperating with them, we have got their hearts. Their hearts are available to us. Then the whole thing will go on well. But now that somebody is 120% perfect or 110% perfect, you choose that option. Then all these people will say yes on the face. But then when the actual thing starts, everyone will take a about turn. Isn't it? And only these two people have to do everything, one or two people. You understand, isn't it? So, these are the prejudices that we have to take into account when we discuss with people. But the win-win person is a person who always feels that if there is a better way than my way, he doesn't mind accepting. That is win-win. That means he wishes well for everyone. Yudhishthira Maharaj is a practical example. Because, ideally speaking, when Yudhishthira and Pandavas went to forest after they were defeated in the gambling match, what was the understanding? When they come back after 12 years, 1 year they have to be incognito, Ajnatavas period. And if Kauravas can't locate them, then who has won? Pandavas have won. Then the whole kingdom will be returned to the Pandavas. That was the understanding. So they came back, and 1 year, where were they living? Virat Desh, right? And successfully they completed the period. Now, on the last day, not even the last day was over, the next day, that was the day Arjuna, you know, fought with all the Kauravas, isn't it? It was, so, along with Virata's son, when they had come to attack the Virata Desh. So Dronacharya said, it is too late, now we know that this fellow is Arjuna. But yesterday was the last day of their Ajnatavas period. They completed successfully. So they were supposed to be handed over the whole world back, but the Kauravas didn't hand over. But Yudhishthira was such a benevolent king. He told Krishna that, I don't want all the kingdom back. If Duryodhana is ruling well, let him rule. But at least let him give us 5 villages. So this is actually win-win. Win-win person actually desires well for everyone. He is not bent upon quarrel. He is bent upon arriving at a solution. So we can see our mentality when we are put in a conflict. Are we belligerent? You know what is belligerent? Quarrelsome. Belligerent is quarrelsome. Some people are just eager for arousing a quarrel. They are fond of it. Just like you see sometimes in the, many ladies go to get water from a tap. Sometimes there's a long queue. You have seen quarrel there? At the least expected moment, a quarrel will break out. They'll talk about each other's homes, they will throw the pots, they will shout, yell, give bad words and everything. So there are some people are determined to fight, are waiting for a fight. So when there's a conflict, the first thing one should desire is a solution. And a solution which is mine, or which is his, or which is better than both of our solution. Which is actually best for the mission of Srila Prabhupada. One should be convinced of that. Then one can at least think win-win. One can think in that way. So that is why I said, not my way, not your way, but a better way. Yeah. And if your way is that better way, then we accept that. Or if my way is better way, you understand it. But ultimately everyone should benefit. That is thinking win-win. So there is also win-lose. Win-lose. What is the meaning of win-lose? I win and you lose. And some people are adamantly attached to their opinions. and at any cost they will not hear others' opinions. And even if they hear it, they are only waiting for some time to tell their opinion. Or they have heard the other's opinion in order to convince them, after they have heard them, that my opinion is the best opinion. So, Duryodhana was like that. Duryodhana actually, even many of the Kurus, Kuru leaders actually advised him very nicely. But he didn't pay any heed. He said, why should I give 5 villages to the Pandavas? Because if they exist in one corner, that will always be a source of anxiety for me. They should be finished off. And I am a majority now and they are minority. We are 100 and they are 5. I want to see that they are finished off. They just shouldn't survive. So, this kind of approach to any problem is actually called as Bindu's problem. Not paying any heed to the, not giving any credit to the other opinion. Taking one's opinion as the only opinion. Sometimes people ask in marriage, who wants in your marriage, whether husband or wife, they ask sometimes. What it means is, sometimes in a home, the husband has the upper edge, and the wife is very, very submissive, and the husband is of very domineering nature. And because he brings money and he does, he gets everything to home, sometimes the wife is submissive, and some husbands sit on their heads. You can see that. In other homes, the opposite is true. And the wife, husband doesn't speak anything. He is extremely submissive. And the wife, and the wife is on the head. She is the queen of the house. She dominates everything like that. So sometimes people ask the question, in your marriage, who wins? But actually, no one can win separately, unless your marriage is a win-win, only when there is win-win, husband and wife, only when there is cooperation. Wherever there is a kind of win-lose kind of mentality, in the long run it is not good. If both are not winning, then both are losing. That is why you will understand when we come to talk about the courage and consideration. Actually, we have to be considerate. At the same time, we have to be courageous to express our opinion. Like, for example, we are talking about win-lose. A win-lose person has only courage to express his opinion, but he is inconsiderate of others' opinions. See, the word maturity means to express one's feelings and convictions while being considerate for others' feelings and convictions. That is called as maturity. To express one's convictions and feelings. Like, we all would like to express our convictions and feelings. While being considerate for others' convictions and feelings. That is actually maturity. So, a win-lose person is actually authoritarian. And he considers that the world is a competitive place. So, that's why I give the example of Duryodhana. So, in the win-win situation, I told you about abundance mentality. That there is enough for everyone in this world, isn't it? Whereas here in the win-lose situation, what is the mentality? There are only 2 ways in this world. My way and the wrong way. There is no other way. There is no second way. So I am talking about this because it's very important. Sometimes we follow our standards fanatically. One of our boys, from Gauranga Sabha boys, he went to one of the grihastha devotees. And the devotee was talking to him something, you know. And in the course of the talk, this boy said, No, Prabhuji, you know, I won't come with you and all. No, we are in Gauranga Sabha. Because, you know, you people are, grihastha people, and we will, associating with you, we will become polluted because you are from Gauranga Sabha, he said. Later on, that devotee, grihastha devotee, confided with me, he told me. So I called this boy and asked, hey, did he say like that? Precious Prabhuji, I was actually afraid that time, I told him. Because, you know, Prabhuji, I want to keep my consciousness pure, he was telling. So I was saying, this goes to show the low-class maturity, low-level maturity. So, this is a practical example of fanaticism. You understand? Fanaticism. Simply by being a member of Gauranga Sabha, one doesn't become pure soul. Or simply by marrying, one doesn't become polluted. it actually shows one's lower level of understanding. So, I am great and you are small. Or I am right and you are wrong. That is, and my way is the only way and every other way is the wrong way. So, this is actually this mentality. So, when we talk of win-win having abundance mentality, this win-lose has the opposite, which is scarce mentality. Which means Duryodhana thought that as long as these five people exist in one corner of the world, you know, then I cannot live peacefully. Or who knows, people may start recognizing the Pandavas and they may want to make them the king. And if they succeed, then I am at a loss. That's a failure for me. So if they fail, then that is success for me. See, all of you ask this question to yourself. In our own lives, we all have certainly somebody whom we are envious of in our life, or whom we compare ourselves with. It's likely. If you think like that in the mind, you will see that when they lose in something, you feel a little happy. That means we are having this win-lose mentality. We have the scarcity mentality. Actually, in spiritual world, there can be many bests. You read the chapter Kingdom of God in the Bhagavatam. It says, in spiritual world, it's not a good, better, best. There is one best, second best, third best, there are many bests. And also, spiritual world is not like a corporate company, where if you don't get promotion and acquire that seat, somebody else will occupy it and you can't occupy it. Or if you occupy it, somebody else will lose it. It's not like that. In spiritual world, there's an equal chance for everyone to enter the spiritual world. So there's no dearth of vacancy. Your vacancy is there for yourself. Nobody will take it off. Because you have left your service to the Lord and come here. So you will get it. There is no competition there. In spiritual realm, there is no competition. One can achieve that very easily. Whereas in material world, people are very competitive. So this is Duryodhana mentality because it is scarce mentality. That means if I win, then everyone else has lost. If, like this fellow was thinking, I am very great. So actually they both go hand in hand. Thinking others to be small is accompanied with the thought that I am great. Also, they both go hand in hand. Like that. So, what will this mentality do, win-lose mentality do? It will make others disheartened, undoubtedly. If one is very forceful about one's independent opinion. So there was one boy in one of our bases. He always used to poke his own opinion on others. Like for example, we sometimes see each and every person, in each and every individual we find fault. You've seen that? This is called micromanagement, we call it. See, small things like that. So it imposed. So many people became very guarded, very frightened, and they kept long distance. At last this fellow, he became distanced. Himself went off from the base. He went off. Because when we adopt this approach of win-lose only, that I win and you lose. And if you won somehow or other, but you were not right, then one will feel insecure later. Just like Duryodhana. He drove the Pandavas into forest and he was very happy that I have done it. But after the Pandavas went to forest, he was not peaceful. He was constantly making a plan how to show that the Pandavas are defeated. Because even after the Pandavas went to forest, people were still talking of the Pandavas. And that was giving a lot of displeasure for Duryodhana. He wanted to prove to people that he is the best. And he wanted to show them that I am the best king for all of you. Accept me as the king. In order to do that, he was pampering the people with varieties of facilities. He was trying to do that. And throughout the 12 years, Duryodhana did not rest in peace. You will see that Duryodhana, Dushyasana and Karna all talking to one another, trying to find ways to end the Pandavas completely. There is another category called as lose win. Lose win means you give up. Let the other person take up. It seems to be a very wonderful thing, isn't it? It seems to be a very humble person, humble devotee. That he loses and he allows others to win. But if you carefully observe, what is the mentality of these people, lose-win people? Lose-win is, everyone in this world has always stamped on me. I am always a failure. Okay, everyone stamp on me, whatever you want, you do. This is the mentality of a person. You know, where does it arise from? is it arises from inferiority complex. That is the root of this. Okay, so many people have always, you know, defeated me. Now you are not the only one, you also defeat me. You stamp on me, no problem. But the problem is when somebody is in this lucid mode, they will bury deep feelings in their heart. Deep feelings of worry and vengeance and revengeful attitude, they will bury it and then it will come out in an ugly way later. It will just come up in a very big way later. Because these people have very little courage to express their feelings to others. They cannot express boldly. Like many of us have difficulty saying no to others, right? Isn't it? We have fear of telling no to others. Why don't you want to say no to others? Because when we say no, others will feel bad about me, isn't it? So we say yes, and our yes has not much meaning. Instead of saying no, we may say yes. Dhritarashtra is the example for loose men. Dhritarashtra could never correct his degraded son, Duryodhana. Actually, every time Dhritarashtra would hear advice of Vidura, it will actually be very understandable to him. Actually, Vidura did so much for Dhritarashtra. One time, Vidura brought one sage called Sanaka Sujata. You know that? It comes in Mahabharata. So Vidura went on advising Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra didn't hear. So you know what Vidura said? Okay, now I am not going to advise you anymore. Don't come to me. But he brought a sage, Sanaka Sujata. And that person explained to Dhritarashtra everything. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How is it Krishna? And how Duryodhana is wrong, and how we should not support Duryodhana anymore. After hearing all that, you know, Dhritarashtra felt completely transformed, and he wanted to give good advice to his son. And of course he did. He went to Duryodhana, he sat with him, he gave good advice and all. At last he couldn't win over Duryodhana, because Duryodhana was very vicious. And he knew his father's weakness. He knows where the weakness of father lies. He knows. Because this man is attached to me. Ultimately he has to do what I say. So you will see Duryodhana was always taking lead. So, such people who are lose in category, they very nicely match with win-lose category people. Why? Because the win-lose category people always want to win. So when they meet losing people, what will they do? They will give, they will naturally dominate them, they would naturally win over. Like that. Actually, win-lose and lose-win are two sides of the same coin, because both these parties cannot be happy. Because losing people will have, what is the problem they will have? Inferiority complex. And they will bury deep feelings. And they will have disheartened consciousness, which may come in ugly way, as we said later. And the win-lose people, because they are domineering, they are authoritarian. They are always saying about who wins, who loses, they compare, contrast. So they also suffer from that. Both these people. There is one very special category called as lose-lose. I lose and you lose. That means if both of us are going to lose, then I don't mind losing anyway. That is the consciousness of this lose-lose category. So, this was like Drona and Drupada. See the example of Drona and Drupada. You all know, Drupada had promised to Drona. What did he promise? I'll give you half the kingdom. Isn't it? So, Drona went to the court of Drupada to ask for half the kingdom. Not for half the kingdom, he wanted to meet his old friend and to remind him of his promise. And Drupada saw that in front of the assembly so many people are sitting and they are thinking, I am a royal king. How can I say that my friend is a poor Brahmana? And he told Drona that, you know, friendship can only be amongst equals and royals. It cannot be with a poor beggar like you. If you want some charity, take some charity and go. And he gave him charity and sent him off. And Drona became very angry. And Drona went back with a revengeful attitude. And then later on, he trained the Pandavas, Kauravas, everyone. And then when they asked for Dakshina, what Dakshina can they give you? He told them that I want to win the hand of Drupada. So of course, the Duryodhana party tried first and they were totally defeated and sent back. Then Arjuna and the other Pandavas, they went second time. And actually Arjuna won the hand of Drupada. And he brought Drupada a captive to the hands of Drona. Now Arjuna brought Drupada and put him on the feet of Drona. And Drona looked up and said, oh, he said, Drupada, my dear friend, it seems that all your kingdom has become mine now and you are left with nothing. So what have you got to say? And Drupada was speechless. He couldn't say a word. And seeing that, Drona said, anyway, don't think that I am going to decapitate your head. Because you have taken shelter on my feet, I will not kill you. When I came to you, you were not ready to give half the kingdom, but I am not like you. I would like to offer you half of the kingdom, take it. He said. So he gave him half the kingdom like that. So, it's a revengeful attitude, but then you find when Drupada goes back, taking the half the kingdom, he went with a revengeful attitude. So, what he did, he did a yajna, from which came Draupadi and Drishtadyumna. So, then Drupada sent Drishtadyumna to study under whom? Drona only. Now you may wonder, how will Drona teach? If it was anybody else, nobody would teach. Hey, I am going to teach and you are going to kill me later? I won't teach you. But Drona was a Brahmana. See, Brahmanas, the nature of a Brahmana is, even if he has a revengeful attitude or angry attitude, that doesn't last for a very long time. Whereas for Kshatriya, it lasts for a very long time. So here you find Drona, he accepted it. He was equipoised. He knew that Drishtadyumna is created from fire for killing me. Still as a equipoised Brahmana, he accepted him. He gave him the education, you can see that. But you can see that Drona first of all had a revengeful attitude and Drupada also had a revengeful attitude. In some certain cases you find this continuous back and forth. For several generations you can see that. Both the parties are interested in seeing the other party lose. So now you will see why did Drona wanted Drupada to lose? Because Drupada did not give it in the right way, isn't it? If Drupada would have given half the kingdom, or you would not have humiliated Drona. Now, Drona would not have taken such a step. That's the step that he took. Similarly, there are examples of cases of people who get into this lose-lose mode, which means we develop a very vengeful attitude towards someone and we become an enemy-centered person and we are determined to pull down the leg of that person when we develop such an attitude. Like there was a husband and wife and they got a divorce. It ended up in such a horrible relationship that the husband was told in the court that whatever you sell, you have to give half of it to your wife. So you know what he did? $10,000 house. He sold it in $10. So that his wife will get only $5. And he systematically sold everything in the same manner. You can see that. So this is a lose-lose mode. I lose and you lose. Actually, these are not just some things far away from us. We have to take a close look in our heart also, whether we have this mentality. Like, you know, if you are working with equal devotees, if you find somebody achieving success, somebody getting mercy, somebody getting blessings, in your heart you can get this kind of feelings. Better that I also don't win, he also doesn't win. So that nobody talks about it. I will not do, like this fellow is doing this much and I am doing this much. If I do this much and attach to this, then there will be overall success and this person will get fame. So I will not do my part so that this fellow will lose. And he loses, I lose, both lose, and that both losing is good. One can think like that. This kind of mentality can come very easily. So this is lose-lose mode. There is one particular mode called as win mode, which means the person is concerned only about his win. And he doesn't care about others. Others win or lose, he doesn't care. Or he doesn't compare himself with others. You win, and you leave it for others to secure their own success or failure, whatever they want. Just like a lion, for example, he chases a, you know, deer, he eats it and then leaves the rest of the flesh. I have eaten now. Now foxes can come and eat, you know, any other animals can come and eat. He doesn't care. That's called as win. Of course, that's not always possible when there are many people involved. One cannot only be in the win mode. So out of this, if you ask which is best, if you ask, what would you say out of this? Generally you may say win-win, the answer is actually it depends. Sometimes we may have to accept win-win, of course both parties win. Sometimes win-win may always not be possible. Let me ask you a question, if win-win is not possible, which one would you adopt as the second best? There is another possibility which I did not talk till now. It's called as no deal. No deal. No deal means, for example, either we go for a win-win, or if it doesn't work, then we don't have any deal. Let me give a practical example for this. For example, you are trying to come up with a very satisfactory solution to both. You have to satisfy him also, and you have to satisfy yourself also. And you find it doesn't happen. Actually, this happens in, say, in our stall, we were selling Bhagavad Gita. One person bought a Bhagavad Gita, he went home. When he went home, he saw there was a page torn. Two, three pages are torn. And he phoned up from there and said, see, I have bought a Bhagavad Gita, but it is torn. Four, five pages are torn in your Bhagavad Gita. You know, why you people are selling such a Gita? You don't inspect it before selling? No. So now this devotee on this end, he said, oh, you know, we don't see all that. You know, we are selling in bulk. We are selling hundreds and thousands, you know. So what can we do? So then that man asked, so will he replace his Bhagavad Gita or not? He asked. So this devotee said, I have to find out. And that man became very angry. You have to find out. You know. Why you have to find out? You know, it is your problem that you gave me a torn Gita. So he was shouting like anything. So then again that man called to the devotee, and the devotee said, okay, now I found out from the seniors that, you know, we will replace your Gita. So then this man said, how? Because I am living in Nagar. So I came from Nagar all the way to Pune, and I bought it. Now I am here in Nagar. So how can I take a new Bhagavad Gita now? Then this devotee said, whenever you come to Pune next year or the year after, that time you can take it. That's your problem. He said, So that man said, you see, you gave torn Bhagavad Gita, he said. So it is your responsibility to replace this. So this devotee was telling, no, you can put a sellotape and use that Bhagavad Gita until you come here and giving solution like that. That man was not satisfied. Actually, what that man was expecting was this, that this devotee will say that, you know, don't worry, we will arrange to send it to you by post. And whenever you come to Pune, you come and return the torn one. So that would have satisfied this man. You understand, no? You see, all of us deal with this kind of situation. So this man was feeling as if he is losing and this devotee is winning, correct? In the beginning when he was dealing with that. So another devotee, you know, he was put in a similar situation. As soon as the person said, I found a torn, Bhagavad Gita torn, he said, oh, really, sir? We are very sorry. You see, we sell in thousands, you know, so we didn't inspect all of them. So don't worry, another nice Bhagavad Gita will reach your home tomorrow. Or whatever. So, when the next day when the Bhagavad Gita reached his home, he was so happy. In fact, he ordered for another, you know, 100 Bhagavad Gitas to give it to his friends in marriages and in other occasions like that. So this devotee actually got a win-win, if you see, isn't it? Because, you know, he went and promptly gave him the Bhagavad Gita, a proper Bhagavad Gita. So the man was very satisfied. So he even placed a big order, isn't it? Because now the devotee could enhance the relationship. That means the decision of win-win, win-lose-lose, and all these things, the relationship, time, effort, all these things are involved. And these are factors involved. Now somebody may say, yeah, this is a very good devotee, you know. This is such a nice devotee that he arranged for Gita to be given. But then if you carefully take a closer look, some resources are involved. So this devotee, he left his class and he had to go to Nagar. Going to Nagar and coming back, how much money? Huh? 140 rupees going, coming. Yeah. To give a Bhagavad Gita which is 100 rupees, he spends 140 rupees. They go and come, isn't it? Sometimes, in the name of being benevolent, we may lose resources also. So that is why these things, this kind of conflicts have to be resolved very carefully. As I was telling about no deal, no deal is a situation where, for example, you are demanding something from a customer. So you ask a customer, you are buying something. Say we are buying a second-hand vehicle for the temple now. So we are asking the vehicle, sir, what price can you give the vehicle? So that fellow says, I can give the vehicle at 60,000 rupees. So we are saying, no, you know, we can't pay more than 30,000, you know. So we want the guardian 30,000. He says, okay, I can give you 30,000 if you want, no problem. And what do you think will happen? If he's giving 30,000, what does it mean? Actually, you got a vehicle like that. That's why I'm telling you this example. In our temple, we had one long vehicle. What is the vehicle? Yes, yes, it is. Only it look very royal from outside, but it will never run. But looking, it's very nice. Somehow, if you can take the vehicle and go to some other place, you keep it outside in somebody's house, it looks like a royal vehicle. You know, majestic it looks. Only every time you have to start it, you know, 10 people are required to move it. So this man, when we asked him, you know, he said it will cost 1 lakh or something, and then we asked him at 60,000, he agreed also. But what he did was he removed many important parts. You understand? You remove 40,000 worth parts from the vehicle and you give it at 60,000. Very nice. Isn't it? So, by that what will happen? What do you think will happen? You will feel cheated. Isn't it? You tell him, hey, I asked you for 60,000 with the same vehicle. Not after removing all these things. That is why no deal means that man can tell you, sir, you are asking at 60,000, I am giving at 1 lakh. I am giving at 1 lakh because these are the parts in this vehicle. If you want at 60, these parts will be taken out and we'll give you at 60,000. So that is actually called as no deal. No deal means I can't give you 1 paisa less than 1 lakh because of this. So what will happen is your respect for him will increase. You will understand that he is not a cheater. That's why it's called as no deal. So in our practical dealings we will face these things. We can see that. So win-win of course is a good solution. Sometimes lose-win is good. When there is a situation where you understand the other person and you are ready to be flexible. Sometimes you give up your opinion for the sake of the cooperation of the other person. Sometimes you adopt the loosen mode. For example, I am giving opinion which is 110% correct. And my friend is giving opinion which is 90% right. So if I see that his opinion is not so damaging and I may accept it. It's all right. You may accept it. No problem. Just to keep friendship. Just to keep the relationship. Sometimes you can bend. So here comes three main factors in our relationship where we have to make solution to a conflict. The conflicting situation can be resolved only when one has these three things. I already spoke about it. But I would like to tell you briefly about each of this. Integrity, maturity and non-envy. These three things. Integrity means making and keeping commitments. That's called as integrity. Integrity means making and keeping commitments. Honesty means to confirm reality, confirm the words to the reality. Integrity means the opposite, confirming the reality to your words. Which means, honesty means to say what you will do. To say what you will do, that is honesty. Integrity means to do what you said. That is integrity. So if you give a promise, to keep the promise. That is integrity. So whenever there are conflicts, you will see that people cooperate with you and people sometimes are flexible with you if you have a high integrity. Like if people know that this person actually is understandable, he keeps his promises, he never breaks promises, then it actually is favorable to you. Like maturity, I was telling you, I would like to draw here. See, when you lack courage and consideration, there is lose-lose. When you have a lot of courage, that means you have strong conviction and feeling for your own ideas and opinions. Then you win, but you stamp on others' opinions. So it's win-lose. Same way you see there, if you have too much consideration for others' opinions and you don't have sufficient courage to express yourself. Sometimes people have very good ideas, but they cannot express. You've seen that? They have fear to express. So, then there is lose then. You lose and they win. But win-win requires both courage and consideration. So, a good balance of these two is called as maturity. The maturity continuum, if you see that win-win happens when there is maturity of courage and consideration. That means we are courageous to express our views and be detached. At the same time, we are able to be empathic. So, empathic means to hear others well. You have to be nice to others, at the same time you are courageous to express your opinion. You are empathic to others. At the same time, you don't fail to express yourself. Then you are in the mode. That is maturity. So, regarding non-envy, some very nice points. He says, there is plenty for everyone. That's what I told you earlier. So those who are envious, they have a difficult time sharing credit with others because they want credit for themselves. They have a hard time in being happy for success of others. That means when you hear other devotees' successes, how do you feel? This is a very important question for devotees. So sometimes when something is relevant to us that is being spoken, or somebody is glorifying us, we feel very happy. When other success is being spoken, how much happy we feel? So that's a very important question. Inwardly eating hearts out, they have secret hopes that others may, let others face misfortune to keep themselves in that place. Always comparing and competing. They give energy to possessing things and people to boost their sense of worth. They want other people to be the way they want them to be. Just like the things, no? For example, I make a drawer now. I am a carpenter, I make a drawer. Similarly, they may want others to be molded according to their opinions. Surround with yes people who won't challenge them. See difference of opinions as a sign of disloyalty or insubordination. You all are understanding these terms? Or is it difficult? Is it a little difficult, this one? Actually, these things I am just telling, if anybody has noted down, you can contemplate on this. These are very deep things to explain. This can be explained only when you face a situation. That time you can understand. So, I would like to take one incident from Srimad Bhagavatam about conflicts. In Bhagavatam, there are many examples of conflicts. Very interesting examples of conflicts. Can somebody say? I have got a 4 or 5, yeah? Which one? He's saying, let us take the example of Daksha Prajapati and Narada. That's a conflicting situation. Daksha wants to produce children. And he is a Prajapati. So naturally, he wants them to get married. And he wants to see that they produce a lot of children. But then what is Narada's interest? He wants to see that when those boys, 10,000 children, Harishwas and then later on Shavalashwas, 1,000 of them, when they came to Narayana Saras, Narada saw that they are all pure and serene. They are untainted. And they are taking dip in the holy waters and practicing such tapasya. So why should they get married? He thought that let them be good brahmacharis. So that is Narada's interest. Now, again, conflicting interest, isn't it? Two people having two different interests. So here is a conflicting solution, conflicting situation. So Daksha Prajapati first tried 10,000 and they all became brahmacharis. Then he sent 1,000. They also became brahmacharis. So Daksha is actually called as an expert, isn't it? So Narada was also an expert. Daksha was expert in producing children and Narada was expert in making brahmacharis. They both were expert in their own way. But then Daksha became so angry and Narada came to know that. Daksha was very angry with him. So that conversation is very interesting conversation. When Narada comes to the home of Daksha. But Narada is such a great sage. In his mind he is contemplating. That now I will go to the house of Daksha Prajapati. Why? Because if I go to his house, he will blurt out with anger. all that he has got in his heart, let him speak whatever he wants, and I will keep quiet, and I will tolerate everything. And then if I keep quiet, what will happen to Daksha? Gradually he will come down, he will cool down. And then a time will come when I can make him also into a devotee. So Narada went to meet Daksha Prajapati. So, as anticipated, Daksha Prajapati started loudly shouting, "You Narada, you are going on in the name of sadhu. You are a sadhu. You are not a sadhu. I am a real sadhu," he said. "Why? I am a sadhu because I am performing my dharma. I am performing the dharma of a grihastha. A grihastha is supposed to perform the dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So I am doing the dharma, artha, kama. So without passing through the dharma, artha, kama stages, if one tries to artificially go to moksha stage, one will be a failure. And I produce so many children and I raised them in the path of pravritti marg. I wanted them to become married and enjoy family life and become mature in family life, and then they will come to a stage when they will seek moksha. But you have prematurely, you have distracted them from the purpose of life. So because I am performing my dharma of a grihastha, so I am a sadhu and you are a sadhu." I told him like that. So Prabhupada doesn't leave these conversations without giving purport. Prabhupada gives purport there. So Prabhupada says that Daksha was trying to tell Narada that, you know, why don't you, everyone has to go through the material world to understand the problems of the material world, and then one will get realization. So Prabhupada gives example of pregnant woman. A pregnant woman, when she is about to get a child, she cries like anything and says, "Oh, this is my last child," because it is so painful for her. And then once the child is born, she goes back, child becomes bigger, and after 2 years again she comes back to hospital, again pregnant. She comes. And again second child, third child, fourth child, like that. So Prabhupada, in the same way, Daksha Prajapati, although he was arguing that when one undergoes the pravritti marg, then one will come to realization. But nobody comes to realization like that easily. Even after undergoing all the hurdles of the material world, again and again, punaha punaha, charta charvanana. That is why Narada did not allow these boys to go and get married. So, Prabhupada gives all those explanations. From Daksha's point of view, Prabhupada appreciates Daksha in one place. And Daksha, he was doing his duty. And then Prabhupada says the wrong points of Daksha also explains about how Daksha was wrong in scolding Narada Muni. Daksha actually gave him a curse. He told him that, "I curse you that you can't stay in one place, that you will keep traveling all over the world like that." After hearing all these things, Narada spoke only two words at the end. He folded his palms and said, "Tad Badam," he said. Tad Badam means, "I accept whatever he told about me as true. Thank you very much." That's all he said. So when Daksha saw this, his heart became totally melted. He became broken hearted. Afterwards he was lamenting, "Why did I behave like this with Narada?" And outwardly he was scolding Narada Muni like that, but after Narada went, he thought, "He's a real sadhu." He thought, like, yeah, I understood. So the conflict ended like this, between Narada and Daksha like this. So in a conflicting situation, one requires patience. We learn from Narada. We require a lot of patience. Because sometimes we are misunderstood. When we are totally misunderstood by the other person, sometimes you have seen two people, they are having a verbal battle. You have seen that? And the verbal battle goes on building so much. Why? Because what is the reason? Misunderstanding between two people. Sometimes in a bus or train, you have seen that? Two people misunderstand one another. It just goes up, goes higher and higher. So it leads to verbal battle, slamming doors, and not able to look at one another and talk. So sometimes the conflicts can go to such an extent. But Narada didn't let that happen. He understood that Daksha is angry, so it's better for me to go and pacify Daksha. So he went and pacified Daksha, very intelligent. At the right time, he pacified Daksha. So it's like in a steam engine, you have seen, they have this steam valve is there. In a cooker, we have the steam valve. Similarly, Daksha's pressure was building up, boop, 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 like that. It was building bigger and bigger. So Narada Muni went and vented it off. Completely cooled them down. Yeah. And then Daksha Daksha really showed that he is expert. Third time what he did, instead of begetting boys, he begot girls now. Narada Muni came to find out what happened. When he came to girls are born, he went away. So Daksha was a real expert. So he really resolved the conflict. So there was no room for another conflict. There is another interesting conflicting situation in Srimad Bhagavatam of Prithu Maharaj. I am reading recently Prithu Maharaj's pastime. Very interesting. Here, as you know, Prithu Maharaj is a king of the whole world, and a king's duty is to protect the citizens by giving them grains, by giving them water, giving them all facilities. But when he became king, he saw that there is no grains, there is no water, there is no milk, everywhere the earth is drying up, and he was wondering. And then he looked into earth, and Mother Earth was storing all the grains and everything within her. So Prithu Maharaj became very angry. So when Mother Earth came to know that Prithu Maharaj is very angry, now he is going to punish me, so she took the shape of a cow. Actually, every planet has a presiding deity, and Prabhupada is the presiding deity of Earth. She is actually a female. She is like a mother, Bhumata. But she can take any form, Prabhupada says, because on the surface of the Earth, all the 8.4 million species are there, isn't it? So she can take any one of those forms if she wanted. She can take a male form, she can take a female form, she can take a tree's form, or any animal's form. Because all these forms are born on her body using her ingredients only, the earth, water, fire, air, ether. So what form she took? She took the form of a cow. Why? Because cows were so sacred in the Vedic times and they won't be harmed by anyone. So she knew that Prithu Maharaj is very angry that I am not yielding all the necessities of life. He'll be angry with me. So she took the form of a cow and she was moving. But then Prithu Maharaj became so angry, took his bow and arrow and started chasing her, about to kill her. She started running. At last he caught her. And she was begging. She said, "I am a woman. I am a cow is a female. And I am also a cow. A king like you who is following the principle of religion is never supposed to kill somebody who is in such a position. Because king is supposed to protect 5 people, isn't it? The cow, the brahmana and all that." She said, and the Prithu Maharaj scolded her and demanded from her. And then she said, because all the people on this earth have become irreligious. They are enjoying the grains for themselves, so that is why I didn't offer. Now that a righteous king like you has come, I will offer everything. And she starts giving everything. And later on, Prithu Maharaj wants to perform sacrifices. And he is planning to perform 100 sacrifices. And after he does 99 sacrifices, in the 100th sacrifice, Indra becomes alarmed, fearing that if this king succeeds in completing 100 yajnas, then he will occupy my post. What will happen to me? I will be driven out of my post. So considering this, Indra comes to the sacrificial arena and steals away the horse and goes away. Actually, the horse has already gone all over the globe and come back successfully. There is no opponent. There is no opponent to Prithu Maharaj. And he has done 99 sacrifices. But here, Indra took away the horse. Then Prithu becomes concerned, and he finds out that somebody has taken the horse, and later on the horse was brought back. Then second time Indra takes the horse again, second time also. So this happens again and again. In Ashwamedha Yajna, towards the conclusion, he needs the horse. But here Prithu Maharaj observes that it's being taken away, so he sends his son Ajita. So Ajita goes chasing after Indra, who is running away with the horse. But Indra converts himself into a mendicant kind of form, like a Kapalika mendicant, carrying a Kapala stick in the hand. That kind of mendicant, he carries the horse away. So Prithu's son is fearful to kill this mendicant. How can I kill a sadhu? A sadhu is carrying away the horse. So he's running behind him and shouting, "Hey, please give the horse back, give the horse back." So even the guru, who was the guru? Vasishtha, is it? I don't remember the name of the sage. No, one of the sages. He tells the son of Prithu, Ajita, "Are you kill him? He is not a mendicant, he is Indra. you send the arrow and you take, bring the horse back, he says. So, still he doesn't kill him. In the meantime, what happens? Brahma comes there to sacrificial arena and tells Prithu Maharaj that, Prithu Maharaj, please kindly do not perform the Handratha Yajna. Stop it. Do not do it. So, he says, your sacrifice is unnecessarily leading to a cosmic disturbance. We are finding that Indra is becoming disturbed and Indra is not doing his duty. He is after you, trying to take away the horse and stopping the Yajna and all, because he is unnecessarily alarmed that you may become the next Indra. Actually, you are a devotee. You are not aspiring to go to heaven. But because Indra is mistaking unnecessarily. So, don't be overly attached to performing the 100th Yajna. Just leave it. And Prithu immediately accepts when he does not perform the 100th Yajna. And Lord Vishnu comes there. I would like to read a few verses from what Lord Vishnu speaks here. See, here Lord Vishnu is speaking. Lord Vishnu is saying, my dear King Prithu, Indra, the King of Heaven, has disturbed your execution of 100 sacrifices. Now he has come with me to be forgiven by you. Therefore, excuse him. Lord Vishnu is saying, O King, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities for others is considered best amongst human beings. An advanced human being is never malicious to others. Those with advanced intelligence are always conscious that this mental body is different from the soul. If a personality like you, who are so much advanced because of executing the instructions of the previous acharyas, is carried away by the influence of my material energy, then all of your advancement may be considered simply a waste of time. Purushayadi muhyanti tvadrisha deva mayaya shamayeva param jato dhirgaya vriddha sevaya. So, again I am reading this translation. He says, if a personality like you, who are so much advanced because of executing the instructions of the previous acharyas, is carried away by the influence of my material energy, then all your advancement may be considered simply a waste of time. And then he tells him, yeah, here he is saying, since the spirit soul is completely different from this combination of gross and subtle material elements, my devotee who is connected with me in intense friendship and affection, being completely in knowledge, is never agitated by material happiness and distress. So I made some notes from this. This I consider to be the cream of the whole talk of conflict resolution. Because here there is a conflict between Prithu and Indra. Now, out of the two, who is right, who is wrong? Yeah? You all understood the problem or you didn't understand the problem? What is the problem? Now, Prithu is doing 100 yajna for the welfare of the whole world and for the pleasure of the Supreme. And Indra is mistakenly thinking that this fellow's performance of yajna will make me lose my post. So, he is taking away the horse. So, out of the two, who is wrong? Indra is wrong or Prithu is wrong? Indra is wrong, it's very obvious. It's understandable. Indra is wrong. But here, what is the Lord telling Prithu to do? He's telling, he's like your, you know, like younger brother, you just forgive him. And you don't perform the 100th yajna. Now, if I were in Prithu's position, what I would ask? I would ask, my dear sir, you are telling me to stop the 100th yajna. Why don't you tell Indra that I have the potency to perform 100 yajnas? If you want, I can even take his post. But I am not interested in his post. I am planning to return back to spiritual world. Why don't you go and tell him? Why don't you make him understand? Why are you asking me to solve the 100th yajna? Isn't it? Will you not ask like that? But Prithu did not ask that. And especially just now I told you, the Prithu becoming angry with earth. Correct? So there he became angry with earth. That anger was transcendental anger. Why? Because it was meant for the welfare of all the living beings. Whereas here, Prithu doesn't become angry. That is most important. So he became angry when he was supposed to become angry. But here, he didn't become angry out of false ego. You see that? And when Vishnu told him that, you know, these are the lessons. A Lord's devotee should be in complete knowledge of the difference of the soul from the body. And the Lord's devotee should be connected with the Lord in intense friendship and affection. And the Lord's devotee should never be agitated by material pleasures and pains. These three things are very essential. Somebody can write this again. You can write a Lord's devotee. What are the three things? These are expectations of Lord Vishnu from Prithu Maharaj. That means the expectation from us also. A Lord's devotee should... No, don't use red one. Use black one. It is not to play on. Lord's devotee should, number one, be in complete knowledge of soul different from gross and subtle body. Lord's devotee... Okay. Lord's devotee should be below, number one. Yeah. In complete knowledge of souls different from grass and subtle body. Number two, connected with Lord in intense friendship and affection. Body. Number two, connected with Lord in intense friendship and affection. Connected with Lord in intense friendship and affection. Third, never agitated by material sukh-dukh. Here Prabhupada gives a beautiful example here. He is never affected by material sukh and dukh. Prabhupada says, like a businessman is going in a car. He is sitting in the back seat and the driver is driving the car. So now the businessman is aware of the car, how much petrol is there in the car, all that he knows. But his contemplation is on what? His business, while sitting in the car. Of course, he is giving direction to the driver. He is telling, take right, take left, go straight. He is giving direction to the driver also. At the same time, he also checks, what is the speed of the car, how much petrol is there, whether all the parts of the car are functioning properly. So he knows about the car. But his business is not the car. His business is, what our business is doing. So he's contemplating on his business. He tells the driver, you take me to that lane, you take me to that shop, I have to meet this client, that client. He goes like that. Similarly, Prabhupada is saying, I'll read it exactly for you. You can see what Prabhupada is saying. A businessman riding in a motor car sits in the car, supervises its running and advises the driver. He knows how much gasoline is used up, petrol is used up, and he knows everything about the car. But still he is apart from the car and is more concerned with the business, not just with the car. Even while riding in the car, he thinks of his business and his office. He has no connection with the car, although he is sitting there. As the businessman is always absorbed in thoughts of his business, so the living entity can be absorbed in thoughts of rendering loving service to the Lord. Then it will be possible to remain separate from the activities of the material body. This position of neutrality can be possible only for a devotee. So this is a very amazing example, it is. Because these three points can be understood with this example. A Lord's devotee should be in complete knowledge of soul being different from the body, like we are different from the car. Like that. Second is connected with the Lord in intense friendship and affection. Yeah. That means that is his main business. That's the main business of the soul in the material world, isn't it? This is what we are working for. Why are we doing Krishna consciousness? Ultimately, we want to develop intense friendship and affection with the Lord. So, even while sitting in the body. And not affected by material sukh and dukh. Now, here was a conflict for Prithu Maharaj, where he was right and Indra was wrong. But the Lord told him, my dear Prithu, you can understand me, what I am saying. You are aspiring to return to spiritual world. And that is your main interest, right? And you are not concerned about the material pleasure and pain. But this Indra is concerned about the petty pleasures of the world. material sukh and dukh. So if I am in Indra's post, he is getting sukh. If I am going to lose the post, I am getting dukh. So he is concerned about material pleasures and pains. But what about you, my dear King Prithu? You are aspiring to return back to spiritual world. So why should you compete with him? That is Lord's argument. Similarly, you are connected to me in love, an intense friendship. We both know one another. You are my associate. You are my servant. I am your master. And we are in the spiritual world. Our relationship is in the spiritual world. So why should you perform the 100 yajnas, which is meant to elevate a person materially in the material world? Because that causes unnecessary disturbance to Indra. But your relationship is with me. So don't be disturbed. So because Prithu Maharaj was truly in the second point which we have written here, he was in friendship with the Lord and affection to the Lord. He immediately agreed to obey to the Lord's request. And he has the knowledge of the soul being different from the body. So if we are following these three things, then we will be able to behave as Prithu Maharaj behaved. This is another very important verse. This is 4:20:16. Very important. Here, the Lord is saying, my dear King, I am very captivated by your elevated qualities and excellent behavior, and thus I am very favorably inclined toward you. You may therefore ask from me any benediction you like. One who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot possibly achieve my favor simply by performance of sacrifices, severe austerities or mystic yoga. So the cream of this translation is this. One who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot achieve Lord's favor by any amount of japa, tapa, yajna, etc. So what this is, elevated qualities are talking here. What elevated quality did Prithu Maharaj exhibit? Can someone say? What elevated quality did Prithu Maharaj exhibit in this pastime? Yeah?
He sacrificed
what?
His own opinion.
Yeah. He says that Prithu Maharaj was ready to sacrifice his own idea or his own desires to perform the yajna, which he wanted to complete 100 yajnas. He had taken a vow to complete it, but he couldn't complete it. But for the Lord's sake and superior authority's sake, he could sacrifice it. Yes, Shankarabhadipu? Forgiveness. Yeah. To err is human, to forgive is divine. We say, no? So he understood that Indra committed a fall. Actually, Indra was about to fall on the ground, so Prithu Maharaj goes and embraces him. And he doesn't allow him to fall on the ground. He just embraces him. So Lord Vishnu is watching all this. Lord Vishnu is seeing that Indra is at fault, and Prithu is right. And the Lord told Prithu to start the yajna, and Indra is seeking forgiveness for his folly, and still Prithu Maharaj is embracing him and not even allowing him to offer obeisances. So Lord Vishnu was so pleased, it is said, when Lord Vishnu got him from the Garuda, Lord Vishnu was embracing Garuda's neck with one of his hands, and Lord Vishnu was literally floating on the ground because his feet doesn't touch the ground. Like that. So, and he was bending on the body of Garuda, and Prabhupada says that was a sign of love that Lord Vishnu showed towards Prithu. Because those tender movements of Lord Vishnu's body awakened dormant love in the heart of Prithu towards Lord Vishnu. Like that. And Lord Vishnu did all these things to please Prithu. Because Lord Vishnu was himself pleased with him. So he was pleased with his forgiveness. Seeing his forgiveness. Although Prithu was right, still he forgave Indra. Yeah. And he sacrificed, as Narasimhapu said. He also sacrificed. Yeah. So this is these are the elevated qualities that he is exhibiting. Prithu Maharaj is exhibiting. Yeah?
Prithu did his yajna from the pleasure of the Lord.
Yeah.
The Lord is saying, expressing his satisfaction that by doing bhajan act, he will be satisfied. Then he is following you.
Yeah. So he was doing sacrifice only for the Lord's pleasure. And Lord did not want him to do, so he was ready to stop. Like if somebody says, there are many people who say, I am doing this only for the pleasure of the Lord. So what is the test? When you are told to give up that, are you ready to give up? So, if somebody says, there are many people who say, I am doing it for the Lord's pleasure, but if he is told that you give up this and you do that, not this, Then if he says, no, 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 I want to please the Lord, please allow me to please the Lord. I will do this only. What does that mean? Isn't it? So, I remember there was one devotee in Chennai. He was preaching in Chennai very vigorously and he was getting many, many devotees. Practically in his class, there used to be 40, 50 devotees attending, students and all. So, one day he would take Bhagavad Gita, one day Bhagavatam, one day Sanjarsamrita he would take in a week, you know. A lot of people are coming. So, suddenly there was a talk, you know, and amongst people that, you know, he is preaching for Radhanath Swami, or, you know, he is telling people to take Diksha from Radhanath Swami or whatever. So then Radhanath Swami told them that, you know, you should not preach. I should stop all preaching. Because, you know, there is some kind of rumor spreading. We don't know whether it's true or not. But because the authorities are unhappy and they are feeling that, you know, you are propagating my name there and things like that, so you don't preach. So it was a test, and he was a big preacher. You can imagine, he would give 2 hours classes every evening, almost 3 evenings, and then other evening he would give congregation program and things like that. So now if he was doing it for the pleasure of Guru, then he would stop, and he stopped. So when you are told to do, you should do. When you are told to stop, you stop. Just like in a symphony, you know, symphony, everyone is playing and different instruments. Like you tell immediately, violin, you say, and then he plays violin immediately. And the drums, you say, and then he starts playing drum, isn't it? And then he says trumpet, and then immediately he takes the trumpet, he plays it. So the director is saying different, music director is asking different people to play, and they are all playing different roles like that. Now, if there are some instruments which are used very rarely, you know that? They may not be frequently used throughout. Like for example, a flute. In certain places, he has to be used. But the flute becomes annoyed and he says that, I want to play throughout. And he keeps playing kong, 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 kong throughout, isn't it? Or the drum person feels that, you know, I want to keep playing, my hands are itching now, you know. Tup, kudum, 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 he keeps playing, you know. And the whole music will be spoiled. You know? So when he is told to play, he should play. When he is told to stop, he has to stop, isn't it? So now, Prithu Maharaj did the yajna for Vishnu's pleasure only. And Vishnu himself coming and saying, stop. And he didn't counter-argue. I mean, he didn't argue back. He didn't say, Madhav Vishnu, please, this is only one yajna, you know, last one, you know, please. He didn't say that. You know, just wait a minute. You know, whatever you all want to say, Brahma, Vishnu, all of you wait. You know, please don't come in my way. You know, I'm trying to please Vishnu, you know. And Vishnu is coming and saying something if he doesn't want to hear. No? He didn't say that. No? He understood that they are telling the most difficult thing to do. And he was ready to do that. Because if this is what will please you, I'm ready to stop. So that's a big sacrifice. Big sacrifice. And here see, Lord is saying, one who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot achieve me, he's saying, and cannot achieve my favor simply by performing yajna, dana, tapa, japa and all that, yoga and everything. That means, in this world it is very easy to do japa, tapa, yajna, dana. All these things are more easy to do than exhibiting such elevated qualities. You understand this? Fine. So what Prithu Maharaj did is a miraculous thing. It's a Herculean thing what he did. He put aside his false ego for the pleasure of the Supreme. He never argued back. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. The Lord openly says that performing great sacrifices or undergoing the austerities of mystic yoga practice cannot satisfy him. He is pleased only by elevated character and behavior. But these cannot develop unless one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. When the spirit soul is contaminated by the material modes of nature, one is considered good or bad with reference to material qualities. But when one is transcendental to all material qualities, all the good qualities come out. Then all the 26 qualities come out. So these are actually the challenges for us. Here, the great saint Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, in this way Maharaj Prithu, the conqueror of the entire world, accepted the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead on his head. So there in the purport, Prabhupada is saying, this means that anything spoken by the Personality of Godhead should be taken as it is with great care and attention and with great respect. Three things he says. You can write that also. Accept Lord's instructions with great care, attention and great respect. Actually, I had given a word called rag. Rag means developing love for the Lord. You know Rag? Rag or Anurag we say, no? So R-A-G, respect, attention and great care. What do they say? Yeah. R-A-G, respect, attention. So this is the way one should accept the instructions. And then Maitreya is saying, as King Indra was standing by, he became ashamed of his own activities. Yeah. That is respect, attention and great care. As King Indra was standing by, he became ashamed of his own activities and fell down before King Prithu to touch his lotus feet. But Prithu Maharaj immediately embraced him in great ecstasy and gave up all envy against him for his having stolen the horse meant for sacrifice. So here another interesting point. There are many cases in which a person becomes an offender to the lotus feet of a devotee and later becomes repentant. Here also we find King Indra, King of Heaven, doing like that. Indra was so powerful that he accompanied Lord Vishnu. He felt himself a great offender for stealing Prithu Maharaja's horse that was meant for sacrifice. And then Indra decided to fall down at the lotus feet of King Prithu. But the king was so magnanimous, a Vaishnava, that he did not want Maharaj Indra to fall down at his feet. Instead, King Prithu immediately picked him up and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidents. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other, but since both of them were Vaishnavas, or servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas. You can note in the purport number, it's very important. This is 420.18. See, Prabhupada is saying here. This is a good point, isn't it? So he is saying, King Prithu immediately picked him up and embraced him, and both of them forgot all the past incidents. Both King Indra and Maharaj Prithu were envious and angry with each other. You know why, correct? Why they were envious and angry with each other? Indra was envious and angry because he thought that this fellow will become Indra. And Prithu Maharaj was angry because this fellow is not allowing to perform yajna, taking away the horse. But since both of them were Vaishnavas, our servants of Lord Vishnu, it was their duty to adjust the cause of their envy. This is also a first-class example of cooperative behavior between Vaishnavas. In the present days, however, because people are not Vaishnavas, they fight perpetually among one another and are vanquished without finishing the mission of human life. There is a great need to propagate the Krishna consciousness movement in the world so that even though people sometimes become angry and malicious towards one another, because of their being Krishna conscious, such rivalry, competition and envy can be adjusted without difficulty. Prabhupada is saying. So this is very important for devotees. And in the next purport, Prabhupada says this. Lord loves the devotee who tolerates, forgives and behaves compassionately towards other devotees very much. So, this is the climax of the discussion today. That here are two Vaishnavas having quarrel, Indra and Prithu. Now when Vishnu was away, Brahma was away, they both were fuming, sniffing, isn't it? Prithu was angry, Indra was angry. But as soon as the superior comes, immediately we feel ashamed of fighting, correct? Imagine in the base there is a quarrel going on. Suddenly I land up there, one morning without telling anyone. Suddenly, either I come, or I send Gausandha Prabhu, or I send Sundarshan Prabhu. Suddenly you find. So two devotees quarreling with one another. How do they feel when some senior Vaishnava immediately appears there? They feel very comfortable. How do they feel? They feel ashamed, isn't it? You feel a little uneasy. So, actually you may feel uneasy, but then you may say, later on I'll take care, you go. Now Prabhuji has come now today. Prabhuji, please give class, Prabhuji. Isn't it? You may show teeth to him and smile to the senior. Isn't it? But then here, Prithu and Indra, they both were angry. They were envious. Indra was envious. Prithu wasn't envious. Prithu was angry and Indra was envious. So, such a relationship could be dissolved. How? Because Prithu forgave and he forgot all the past incidents. And this quality of Prithu was very pleasing to Lord Vishnu. This quality. such elevated qualities are expected in a pure devotee, in a Vaishnava. So, if one wants to return to the spiritual world, such are the qualities that one has to exhibit, which is very painful to exhibit, because we have false ego. Such a conflict was resolved by Prithu himself, because he bent himself to the Lord's will, to please the Lord, please the Supreme Lord. So generally, the Lord appears in a place where a sacrifice is complete. But here the Lord appeared in a place where the sacrifice was not even done. And the sacrifice was not done. Although Prithu Maharaj didn't do sacrifice, the Lord still came. Because Prithu pleased the Lord and fulfilled the desire of the Lord. So Prithu Maharaj was not adamant to complete what he wanted to do. If any of us were in Prithu's position, you can imagine. Because these things are prestige issue, isn't it? Because the whole world is watching. Everyone is watching that you are going to do 100 yajnas and you are king of the whole world. And you have done 99 yajnas already. The last one is supposed to be done. And the Lord comes and puts a break. So it's very painful for one to stop it. So that is why these three things which we said earlier, those three things. So in our personal lives, if we develop those three things, one is the clear understanding between difference between body and soul. And one develops intense affection and what is the other one? Friendship with the Lord, in Krishna consciousness. Tvad virya gayana mahamrita magna chitta. Prahlad says, my dear Lord, I am absorbed in your remembrance. So much so that, you know, he did not feel any pinch of the sufferings given by his father to him. His father inflicted so many sufferings upon him. But Prahlad Maharaj could not perceive them at all. Because Tvad virya gayana mahamrita magna chitta. Magna chitta means absorbed in that. That is the second point. Third point said about the material sukha and dukkha. We have to know all the pleasures and pains that we all experience is material, in the material world. So we should not take them very seriously. Even the conflicts that come with devotees, they are actually superficial. One should understand that the Sadhguru Maharaj writes in one of his books, he says, although devotees may occasionally quarrel, heart of hearts they love one another very much. He says that. He says that they always wish well for every other Vaishnava. For example, you had a quarrel with a devotee, like Siddhasana Dasprabhu, for example. So, when he passed away, even the devotees who had small quarrels with him, you know, they forgot all the quarrels. When they saw his body, you know, they were circumambulating and they were praying. They were wishing well. Because nobody wishes ill for a Vaishnava like that. But, Sadhguru Maharaj writes, although it is true that they wish well for all Vaishnavas, because we have not yet come out of the material world till now, material consciousness, devotees have small, small quarrels. There are small quarrels, small envy, small comparison, small competitiveness. It is there in a neophyte state. Fight, fight, neophyte. Because neophyte means they are very new to devotional service and they always fight. That is neophyte. So, that is neophyte behavior to fight. And I like this purport the most. How Prithu forgave, and because of which Indra also became transformed. You can see that. It's very amazing. This is one of the top class conflicts. There is another conflict situation that comes in the fourth canto of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj wants to kill the Yakshas. Why? Because his brother Uttama was killed by one of the Yakshas, and Dhruva becomes infuriated. And he goes to Alkapuri and starts killing all the Yakshas. And he kills Yakshas in such a way, all the Yakshas flee for their life. Not even one single Yaksha is left in the battle. Everyone runs away. And still Dhruva Maharaj doesn't leave them. He goes into Alkapuri with his chariot and he wants to find out, where are the Yakshas? Come out. Where are you hiding? Playing on his conch shell, he's inviting Yakshas for a fight. At that time, who comes there? Swayambhu Manu comes. Swayambhu Manu comes there and tells, hey Dhruva, you are a pure devotee of the Lord, you already attained Vaikuntha in your life. The anger that you are showing towards the Yakshas is not justified. One Yaksha killed your brother. For that we'll have to completely wipe out the Yakshas race. This is not proper. It doesn't give beauty to a person like you. And then the way Swayambhu Manu preaches is so nectarian to hear. See, sometimes when we are angry towards someone, we may take action more than what the person deserves. Like Indra, for example, was little upset with the Vajabhasis. Why? Because the Vajabhasis were not offering Indra puja. And then he saw that they took all the puja and offered to Govardhan. And he was wondering, hey, why are you offering to Govardhan? Then he saw that they were all being directed by the small boy Krishna. And he became wild. And his anger went beyond limits. He said, I am the one who gives all of you rain every time. And without me the crops cannot grow. Now, do you have more faith in Krishna than me? Now, wait and see what I can do. He became enraged with anger. And he sent such a heavy thunder and lightning and such heavy rains. One water particle was like one elephant. It was falling from the sky. And he told the Samvarta clouds, shower such water that the Vajabhasis would be killed along with their animals. You want to kill them. So, do you think Vajabhasis deserve such a punishment for non-performance of Indra Puja? So, this is a overreaction to anger that Indra showed. Similarly, Swami Manu corrected Dhruva, saying that the anger that you are showing towards Yakshas is not justified. It's not proper. You should settle the matter. In fact, he said, the Yakshas are all protected by Kubera. Kubera is the leader. And now Kubera's mind is already disturbed. Because we have killed so many thousands and thousands of Yakshas just for the sake of one Yaksha killing your brother. So it's better for you to go and seek forgiveness from him. Atirosham, he says. Atirosham means excessive anger. And immediately Dhruva Maharaj accepts it. Although in heart of hearts he is feeling very angry that the Yakshas have killed my brother, Uttama. Now what can be done? You can't bring Uttama back to life. You can only satiate, you know, pacify your, you know, grief by, you know, killing the Yakshas. Now he goes to Kubera, but then, of course, the last instruction that Swami Bhavana gives is very amazing. He tells him, neither did the Yakshas kill your brother, nor is Uttama your brother, he tells him. Uttama is not your brother. You have, in bodily consciousness, you are thinking that Uttama is your brother. This is all bodily relationships. And nor did Yakshas kill you. How? Because Yakshas are only an instrument in the Lord's hands. The will of providence is the ultimate cause of everything, cause of all causes. And the will of providence killed your brother through the instrument of Yakshas. So you are foolishly thinking Uttama is your brother and that brother was killed by Yakshas. Both are false. So better go to Kubera and seek forgiveness. So now Dhruva Maharaj comes to his senses. He wants to go to Kubera. And Kubera tells him, my dear Dhruva, you did not kill all these Yakshas, millions of Yakshas. That is the height, isn't it? He tells him, first thing he tells him when he goes, you didn't kill all our Yaksha people, he tells. He says, because the Kala, the will of Providence Supreme, ultimately has decided, as per destiny, who should die. You are just an instrument. But now I am very happy to know that you have a desire to stop the war and you don't want to have any more war. Very happy. He gives many good advices. Kubera also to Dhruva Maharaj. Afterwards, there is a very famous verse in that. It says, Dhruva Maharaj considers that this material world is a very bewildering place. Even after you become pure devotee, one has to be careful. Material world. So he goes to Badrikashram and he intensifies his devotion service. And crying tears of love for the Supreme Lord, he sees the aeroplane coming to take him back to spiritual world. So he gets out of the material world. So material world is a very bewildering place. So we may sometimes, you see, here was a conflict between Dhruva and the Yakshas. Sometimes we may also become overtaken by grief that somebody has done something to us. And that conflicting situation, we may want to punish them as a reaction. So we have to consider these factors into account. Whenever there is a quarrel between Vaishnavas, when they are put in a conflicting situation, actually it will happen. You will see that with equals it will happen, with juniors, with seniors it will happen. Because we are living in material world. Material ends, they upgrade, producing sparks. And because we have not yet become transcendental. So there can be certainly clashes. And as Prabhupada explains very beautifully in this purport, how amongst Vaishnavas when there is a conflict, it should be adjusted. The word adjust he uses. It should be adjusted. Why? For the sake of relationship. It should be adjusted. And for the sake of the pleasure of Supreme. Because the Lord is very pleased when one exhibits such qualities. of behavior. Like Shringi cursed Parikshit Maharaj, and Parikshit Maharaj had the power to retaliate back, but he didn't retaliate back at all. Although he had the power, he tolerated. But then he went back to spiritual world, Parikshit Maharaj. So we can talk many situations from Bhagavatam where two devotees are in conflict. Parvati and Chitraketu are in conflict. Parvati thinks that when Chitraketu is flying in the aeroplane, he is seeing Shiva giving a class on Vairagya, sitting with Parvati. So he is saying, oh, Lord Shiva is giving a class on Vairagya to all great citizen saints while sitting with Parvati on his lap. This is really wonderful to see. He gives a comment like that. Hearing, it must have been within the hearing of Parvati. Prabhupada must have been flying close to the ground. So when Parvati heard it, what did she say? She became very annoyed, angry. She immediately spelled the curse and told them that you are cursing, you are ridiculing my husband like this. I curse you to become a demon. So immediately he comes down to the ground level and offers obeisance to Parvati and says, my dear mother, whatever curse you have given me, I accept the curse. But I would like to clarify that I had no bad intention in ridiculing Lord Shiva. So he clarifies his point. Actually, he didn't ridicule him. So that's a very big history to discuss. The point is, here is a clash between two devotees. Parvati is a great devotee of the Lord also. And Chitraketu is a great devotee. But in the clash, Parvati has failed. Because she spelled the curse on him. That is why Lord Shiva told Parvati. When Lord Shiva turned towards Parvati after Chitraketu offered obeisances, immediately Prabhupada says, in that purport, Vishnu Chakravarti after Prabhupada, all of them give very nice comments. It is said that she immediately took the skirt end of her sari and she covered it like this. Covered her head like that out of shame. Because she felt that I did a mistake by cursing Chitraketu to become a demon. And Lord Shiva told her, very famous verse, Narayana parasarve na kutaschana vibhyati svargapavargana rakeshu apitulya artha darshanah. Lord Shiva said, just see Parvati, the devotees of the Supreme Lord, you put them in hell or in heaven, or you curse them to become a demon or whatever, they don't care because in every life they simply want to serve the Lord. That is the desire. So there Acharya say, Shiva told Parvati that you may be very beautiful, Parvati, but you are not more beautiful than the Lord's devotees. Lord's devotees excel your beauty by their qualities that they exhibit, by the noble qualities they exhibit. Like that Lord Shiva told Parvati, like that. So, so today's class should give us an opportunity to take a second look whenever we are faced with a conflict. That's the first thing. Like Chitraketu, try to see from Chitraketu's viewpoint. If Chitraketu came down, as soon as he came down, he could have argued with Parvati. How can you ever give a curse to me like this? I was not wrong, you are wrong. And he would have demanded Parvati to take back the curse. You know, in the Vedas you find many times people give a curse and take back also, you know. Those who give the curse have the ability to take back also. But he didn't demand that. You see that. So that is his noble quality. As a Vaishnava, he was ready to accept the curse. Actually, that was Lord's arrangement to take him back to spiritual world very soon. So, in the conflicting situation amongst the two, Parvati failed. In a situation of misunderstanding. In the same way, all of us as devotees, sometimes as we delight in each other's association, and dancing, chanting, singing, rendering services together, in the same way there are going to be times when there will be misunderstanding, which may become compounded misunderstanding, and it may turn into quarrel, it may become a verbal battle, and it may take the shape of a big conflict for a period of time. When misunderstandings are not clarified in time, they can turn into very big conflicts in that time to come. And you will see in the long run, the Vaishnavas may keep distance, and they may keep on building up the misunderstanding, which is very dangerous. That is why things have to be clarified in time. And the thing has to be dissolved. Like Chuttu dissolved the matter very wonderfully. He understood that the Lord will be pleased if I don't do this yajna, because Indra is too attached to his post and he cannot understand. Even if the Lord tells Indra that, my dear Indra, Prithu is a pure devotee, try to understand. He will do 100 yajnas, but he won't fight for your post. Still, Indra will scream like anything. Because he's a mixed devotee. He's an attached devotee. So Lord thought it is better to convince Prithu instead of convincing Indra. And Prithu also understood the Lord's purpose. And he obliged. Sometimes in the same way, we do amongst devotees also sometimes. We tell a devotee, you are a soft devotee, you are a nice devotee. And you just cooperate with the other devotee. No problem. Sometimes you say like that. And if the devotee understands and he cooperates, if he back argues, then you can't do anything. So, these things, like they are saying, Lord is not going to come in your life and tell you that you cooperate with me, you know. But you will see the same request will come to you from your spiritual master, from your superiors, from your authorities. Like Ram Prabhu is the OC of a base. Now he has to handle 30, 40 boys in a base. There may be small conflicts. So sometimes you may request one person. See, when two hands come, then there is noise. Isn't it? If one hand wants to clap, other hand goes like this. Isn't it? That cannot be any noise. Isn't it? So sometimes we find out that the best solution for this is this. And we request the person. You just, you know, dissolve the matter like this. So we have to cooperate. So it may be win-win, it may be lose-win, it may be win-lose. So the solution adopted by Prithu Maharaj is beyond all these categories which we discussed in the beginning. Actually, in one sense, it was not win-win, if you see. Because Prithu Maharaj lost performing, gaining the fame of the 100th yajna. Indra got his post. So you may say it's lose-win from the point of Prithu Maharaj, if you see. But Prithu Maharaj got a win beyond win-win. Because he got the special blessings of the Lord. He achieved the ultimate perfection of life. It is not just the average win-win that I'll be king of the world and you'll be king of heaven. No. It is a win beyond all the win, because he achieved the spiritual world by that. So keep in mind this point. Lord appreciates this elevated qualities exhibited by a devotee, especially in crucial situations. So when I read it, I appreciated it so much with my heart. So now this is one of my most cherished realizations, that now I will wait for a situation in future. When I am put in a crucial situation, I will try to exhibit this type of noble quality. It's a great challenge, isn't it? And we all will face such a situation sometime or other. Don't worry, there are enough situations awaiting which will come in future for us to exhibit this noble quality. At that time, we will test you. We will see, the Lord will test to check how you behave at that time. Because just like a bike, you know, bike is never tested in, you know, best conditions on a smooth road, you know. Sometimes they take it on a hilltop and lot of boulders, and lot of stones and trees and everything is there. They ride it in that. The thing that they do like that to check the tire and. Similarly, we will be tested in worse situations. Prithu was put in the worst situation actually. If I was in his position, I would have failed. I would have told the Lord, no. I will go back to Godhead later. Now we have to solve this. Now this rascal Indra, he has to, at least he has to give a reason why he stole the horse. That means he was envious of me. Yeah, this is really high class. So the real conflicts are resolved only on the spiritual platform. So one thing which we didn't talk today, with the lack of time, is there is also conflicts in spiritual world between Srimati Radharani and Chandravali. But those conflicts in the spiritual world are meant for enhancing the Lord's pleasure. There is a quarrel between Satyabhama and Rukmini. Rukmini doesn't fight, but Satyabhama fights sometimes. But those quarrels are never considered conflicts at all, because they are those conflicts are prepared by the devotees to please the Lord. So Prabhupada says also, even in book distribution, we can have competition between one temple and another temple. Prabhupada would say in Los Angeles, you go to San Francisco and say, what are you people doing? You didn't see Los Angeles, what they have done. You know? They will get fired up. No, Prabhupada, we will do better than Los Angeles. You know? And Prabhupada says, if you do better than Lord Chaitanya, then I have to stay here. I can't go. Whichever temple does best distribution, I will stay. You know, Prabhupada will say like that. And then Lord Chaitanya will get the news. And they will say, now we have to beat San Francisco, you know. So Prabhupada sometimes will create a very nice competition, but that should not go to an unhealthy zone. So such competition and conflicts, if they are orchestrated for large pleasure in the spiritual world, that is different. Like sometimes you find quarrels between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu. Jokingly, that's for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pleasure. Lord Chaitanya would enjoy seeing this. But in our life, whatever conflicts you get, most of them are 99.9% of them are material. So it should be adjusted. So you all will read that purport. You noted the number. So we should adjust the conflicts to smoothen it out so that the wheels keep moving. Prabhupada's mission will never stop. Thank you very much. So we won't be going to Prasadam Hall today because only this many devotees are there today. So we will do sitting kirtan only here 5 minutes. And we will conclude the lecture and then have Prasadam. To a degree to which a person is very lusty, to that degree he will drive only his own opinion and he will be blind to others' opinions. Yeah. When one is very lusty.
Yeah.
And also, one may drive one's opinion, but one will also harm oneself by that. Yeah. So such a person will also. That is why we condemn lust. Yeah. We condemn lust, we condemn pride, we condemn anger. All these things are condemned, yeah. Yes,
wonderful. Just like, because the elevated qualities of the devotees, they could solve the problem. The problem got solved itself. But in our case, we need some mediator. Like, the Bhakti Siddhanta is the pastor manager. So, he told the devotees to glorify each other. And so, we need some mediator. So, when the problem comes, should we immediately go to the authority, get solved, or just solve it within us? Because we are limited in our time. Yeah. We clarify the authority,
what
is mediator's role?
Yeah. Yeah, we can certainly, when there's a quarrel amongst the devotees, as you rightly said, for exhibiting those elevated qualities takes time. So we can try our best to solve it amongst ourselves. So here comes the respect. Yeah. Like we say, you know, respect, attention and great care in following instructions of the superiors. So I always keep this one thing in mind. For the welfare of the mission of ISKCON and for the running of the society, we have to avoid the conflict. So it's better for us to bend down. It's better for us to give way. No. Because then ultimately the mission of Prabhupada should not be affected. Like Prabhupada said, you know, if two devotees quarrel and the books are not going out for distribution and both devotees stop book distribution and they are just morose and they are sunken, they have lost their cheerfulness in spiritual life, then what are the use? So Prabhupada said the mission of the Lord should be going on. Just like in the Daksha Yajna, there was a conflict also. Daksha was having a... Daksha saw that everyone stood up except Lord Shiva. So he cursed Lord Shiva. Saying that, you know, he has owl-like eye and everything. Then Nandi became angry. Nandi started cursing Daksha. And Nandi started asking all the Brahmins, do you have eyes and ears to see? This Daksha is ridiculing Lord Shiva. None of you are speaking a word. So I curse all of you Brahmanas that your brain will become blunt. You will simply be rotating in the cycle of birth and death. You know, going to heaven and coming down, simply performing karma kanda, you become karma kanda Brahmins. Because then. And he told that those who are. Then when he heard this, then Daksha became angry. Daksha also actually, it was a curse and counter curse, it was going on. So many of the Vaishnavas and all, they plugged their ears and ran away from there, not wanting to hear any blasphemy, because they would love to take a share of that. So that time, although all these things are happening, the yajna did not stop. Yajna went on. So, because yajna is for the pleasure of Vishnu, that should never stop, even in such atmosphere. So, in our society also, you will find there were Rituviks who created a havoc, they separated, and they are having a separate temple, still continuing the trouble. And the child of his case was made into a huge affair. So much talk was going on, so many people are finding fault. But you will see that the Nam Sankirtan never stops. That goes on. Harinam Sankirtan goes on in all the temples. Mangalarti goes on, chanting goes on, Bhagavatam class goes on. That you never stop. Similarly, amongst the devotees, if our quarrel or clash stops our devotional service, like if somebody says, these devotees, they are like this, and he leaves his con and goes away, then there is no use of that conflict, resolving the conflict. Yeah. Then there is no use. One should be situated in devotional service. So we can go to immediate, surely. Go to SUP there and say. So I was telling today, Dilip is here? Yeah. I was telling Dilip in the afternoon. He had come, so we were talking about devotees in a base. So I was telling him, when you are living in a base, even if a young devotee is posted in an authoritative position, then even if one is a senior, one should obey. Not saying that, Prabhu, although you are a junior, you know, still I see you as my master, I obey you. We can't think like that. But because the instructions are supplied through somebody who is made the authority. Like I was telling the example, when I was made the president here, Krishnanth was still here in the temple. For 6 more months he was there. So he would come and ask me, Sir Ashampu, what service you are allotting for me? So I would feel so awkward, you know, how can I give service to him? So I would say, Prabhuji, you are a Parivajakacharya. So you do traveling and preaching all over Pune, go to all houses of devotees and you give program. But he would say, no, you have to give me some service. You know, you are giving everyone else, you should give me also. So, and he would follow all the norms and rules of the temple. When he has to take a vehicle and go, he will come and ask me, Ashampu, can I take the vehicle? You know? I have written, Prabhuji, you have been a president here before. He would say, no. Now you are the president. You are empowered as a president by the GPC. So anything I do, I have to ask you. You know. So, in the same way, if you are living in a base and a young devotee is posted as an OC, in Mayapur base, it's not the case. You know, the Ramthirpur is a very senior devotee, initial devotee. In Mathura base, we have Jitendra Prabhu as the OC, young devotee. But we have purposely posted him as an OC because he's a student. Others are working, they'll pass out and come. So we wanted a student OC. So somebody might be senior there. If among seniors, if 3, 4 of you are there, everyone is putting their opinion and OC has nothing to say. Or everyone wants their own opinion to be fulfilled. It can pose a difficulty. It can pose a very great difficulty. So actually we have to come to a point of accepting one person. Yeah. That's why I said even if that one person's idea is not 100% right, but if all are agreeing, cooperating, then it would run very nicely. Yeah. But amongst devotees, sometimes devotees wonder, you know, why to, like, you know, there are two devotees who can sing now. Name is not written. So who will sing Narsingarthi? Narsingarthi name is not written. So two devotees are taking kartal in the hand. Who is going to begin first? Yeah. So ideally, what should they do? If you see the other person taking kartal in hands, then you can keep it down. So then he will sing it. Sometimes, you know, people suddenly want to begin. I will begin first. Once I begin, that fellow will keep quiet. No. It's very bad. You know the story he proposes? Like in the Vedic times, you know, there was a land sold by one farmer to another farmer. So the first farmer sold it to second farmer. Second farmer was ploughing. And he found a big pot of gold coins, 1,000 gold coins. So he bought the land only by giving 10 gold coins. But now when he was ploughing the land, he got 1,000 gold coins from a pot. So he very faithfully went to the previous owner and called him. Sir, please come with me. He brought him and showed him. See, here is a pot of 1,000 gold coins. Because I bought the land from you. You know, I think your ancestors must have kept it for you. So I think that my dharma is to give it to you. Better you take it. So I gave it to him. That person took the pot, but then he was a little doubtful. Wait a minute. Is it my dharma to accept this from you? Because the land is yours now. The land is in your name. So you only should take this, he said. If I accept this 1,000 gold coins and take it, then I will go to hell. Better that you only keep it. So that man kept with him and said, yeah, what you are saying is true. Because I bought the land from you, so it's mine now. And then he said, but still you see, I only got the land and 10 gold coins. But at that time, I was not aware that this gold pot was there when he gave me. So I don't think I can accept. So they both had a big quarrel. So that kind of conflict. And they both went to a Brahmana for resolving. And I don't know the solution, what Brahmana gave. What solution he gave. But we can understand this is like a transcendental quarrel, isn't it? Of course, it's a quarrel in the mode of goodness. It's not a transcendental quarrel because Lord is not the center here. If both of them decide that let's give it to the temple of Vishnu, then it will become transcendental solution. Or they can give it for our new temple, Iskcon temple. We are going to temple. But the point is, this is the way our conflict should be among devotees. There is a conflict. Like no one should sing without being requested. No one should start suddenly singing in a bass. Sometimes devotees tell me, Prabhuji, that boy, that Prabhuji, he never hears, he just starts singing. It's very bad if somebody has a tendency. One should not be too eager for this. One should be told to sing, then one should sing. So, conflict amongst devotees is a very important topic because it's the Brahmastra of Kali, Kali Raj, by which he can create cleavage amongst devotees. So we are talking about it today so that these things will get absorbed in our mind. Such a wonderful purport Prabhupada gives here. So we should read Bhagavatam in such a way that we can apply it in our personal life. We should relate to it. We should not just read it for the sake of theory or for appreciating some new information. Srila Prabhupada ki.